So I am back to introduce the last panel before lunch, which will explore joint ventures and their growth as a tool for companies and financial sponsors to share risks, leverage each other's strengths, and access new markets. Our moderator for this panel will be Kimberly Sperry, who is partner in Cleary Gottlieb's New York office. She advises corporate clients on all aspects of their businesses, including domestic and cross-border M&A, corporate governance, carve-out transactions, spin-offs, and other complex corporate transactions. She has generously agreed to step in as moderator at the last minute for this panel. You'll note that Jenny couldn't be with us, so special thanks to Kimberly. To her left, we have Rob Little. Is that the right Rob? Yes, we have Rob Little, who is a partner in Gibson Dunn's Dallas office and global co-chair of the firm's M&A practice group. He advises corporate clients on transactions and security offerings and also works with private investment fund clients and their investors. To his left, we have Rob Kibbe, the second Rob on the panel, who is the head of Munchart's Corporate and Securities Group. He has 30 years of experience advising both public and private companies on M&A, recaps, and other corporate transactions. He focuses his practice mainly on middle market mergers and acquisitions. Finally, at the end, we have Scott Crofton, who is partner in Sullivan & Cromwell's Merger and Acquisitions Group in New York City. He advises public and private companies, as well as private equity firms, on domestic and cross-border acquisitions and joint ventures. So welcome, Kim, and the rest of the panel.
Great to be here. Thank you. So we are going to be talking about joint ventures today, and one of the interesting things about JVs that distinguish them from regular way M&A transactions is that so much of the action happens after closing, right? In an M&A deal, you're often looking, what are the assets I'm buying? What are the operating covenants between signing and closing? But in a joint venture, you're often most focused on what's happening after closing. What do the governance provisions say? What do the exit provisions say? How are we going to operate this business for the benefit of both parties going forward? So in line with that, we're going to kind of go through all of the nuts and bolts of joint ventures. We're going to get into how they get formed, what the governance of those joint ventures are, how people think about exits, how people think about fiduciary duties and non-competes. And for those who are still with us at the end, we will even get into a little bit of accounting. So please do stay tuned for that. So I'm going to turn it over to Rob first and ask him, what are you seeing currently in the market with joint ventures?
So I'm seeing a lot of JV activity, which I love because I love negotiating joint ventures. I'm seeing them in a few different contexts. I'd say, one, I'm seeing a lot more JVs between strategics and private equity sponsors. A lot of those are around specific projects, like infrastructure build-outs. I've seen them, for pipelines. I've seen them for fiber expansion, where you have a strategic that wants to explore a certain area, pursue a certain business strategy. They need capital. You have a private equity fund who wants to be involved in that industry, and so they come together, capital and the strategic know-how. I also see it just when we have two strategics that want to share risk on a venture. Maybe one of them has expertise that's complementary to another. They can come together, kind of 1 + 1 = 3. I also see it with some of my international clients when they want to go into a new jurisdiction. For example, I have a mining client. They want to go, open a new mine in some far-flung jurisdiction. They will JV partner with someone locally who has the local connections, the local expertise, understands the local regulations. So I see them in that context as well. I think all of these, kind of share a few different themes. One is JVs are formed to bring in capital to a new business. Number two, JVs are formed to bring in expertise for a certain kind of business venture, or you are wanting to share risk. A lot of times people are just like, look, I don't want to do this entirely by myself. I don't want to risk all of my capital entirely in this, so I will share that risk with somebody else, either 50-50 or in some other proportion.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Sometimes you'll see joint ventures, for example, between a tech company and a car company for self-driving cars, and that's kind of a classic.
Exactly.
I bring my apples and you bring your oranges and we kind of put it together. But then, as you said, we also see the financial sponsor type of relationships. And Scott, what are you seeing in the joint venture world?
In addition to all the usual places, as Rob mentioned, two places that I'm seeing a real uptick in the use of joint ventures relates to exits, or sort of, we'll call them stage exits from an M&A process. One such example arises from sort of the huge class we have of family-owned businesses that have really grown into something much larger and are looking for outside capital to kind of drive the next stage in their life cycle, whether that's because there's not the next generation who's ready or interested in taking over, or it just requires additional capital needs that a family can't bring.